It is 9 a.m. on July 30th, 2025. This is a time and date scheduled for a hearing set by the notice of filing a notice of public hearing issued by the North Dakota Public Service Commission on June 4th, 2025 for case number PU-25-172. My name is Hope Hogan, and I have been designated as a hearing officer for today's hearing. This hearing is being held at Nesset Consulting Services in Tioga, North Dakota. As we begin today, I'd ask that you please check your cell phones to make sure they're either silenced or turned off so that we don't have cell phone interruptions as we move forward with our hearing today. There's an attendance sheet that will be passed around in a few minutes. The commission will request that you please sign the attendance sheet or sign-in sheet so that they have a record of everyone who attended today's hearing. This is a hearing on One Oak Bakken Pipeline LLC's application for certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for a 7.6 mile long, 6-inch steel natural gas pipeline located in Williams County, North Dakota. The notice of filing and notice of public hearing specified the following issues to be considered in this matter. Number one, will the location, operation of the proposed facility produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens in North Dakota? Number two, is the proposed facility compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? And number three, will the proposed facility location minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? I'll now ask the parties to state their appearance for the record. I'll start with you, Mr. Mann, if you want to state your appearance for the record and introduce the witnesses you intend to call today.
Sure. Thank you, Your Honor. Wade Mann, Crawley Fleck, PLLP, appearing on behalf of One Oak Bakken Pipeline, LLC. I intend to call three witnesses today, Mr. Abel Resendez, Mr. Bill Miller, and Mr. Montana Penton. Mr. Resendez will cover project in general, project infrastructure, things like that. Mr. Miller will address environmental issues, cultural resources, and then Mr. Penton, he will address safety, emergency response, leak detection, those types of matters.
All right, thank you. Mr. Johnson, do you want to state your appearance for the record and introduce commission staff that's appearing with you today?
Yes, Your Honor. Brian Johnson, Advisory Counsel for the Public Service Commission. With me is Chris Hansen, and I ask that if necessary, he be allowed to ask questions.
All right. Thank you. Testimony from the public will be taken after the completion of One Oak's witness testimony. The commission does encourage the public to provide testimony in these hearings, and any information provided by members of the public will be considered by the commission. If you would like to testify today, if you would mark that on the attendance sheet, that would be helpful for planning purposes. All right, it's my understanding that One Oak has four exhibits that it would offer in this matter. Is that correct, Mr. Mann?
Yeah, that's correct, Your Honor. Four exhibits. The first being the initial consolidated application, second, the supplemental filing, and then third, there was some fairly recent correspondence from the Department of Environmental Quality included that. And then lastly, exhibit four would be the certification relating to order provisions and tree and shrub mitigation plan. Those would be the four exhibits. I've communicated with Mr. Johnson, and it would be One Oak's request that we could stipulate to admission of the exhibits up front.
All right, and Mr. Johnson, you're willing to stipulate to admission of the exhibits?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, then exhibits one through four will be entered into the record. Any other preliminary matters we need to address before we move to testimony? Mr. Mann, did you have anything?
I don't have anything, Your Honor.
And Mr. Johnson?
None for me, Your Honor.
All right, then, Mr. Mann, you can call your first witness.
Okay, first witness is Abel Resendez.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'll have you start by stating your full name for the record and spelling your last name.
Sure. Abel Resendez, R-E-S-E-N-D-E-Z.
Mr. Resendez, before you testify this morning, I'm required by law to advise you on the penalties for perjury in the state of North Dakota. Perjury is a Class C felony punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Do you understand what perjury is?
Yes, I do.
And being advised of the potential penalties for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this case today?
Yes, I do.
All right, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Mann.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. Abel, can you tell us who you work for and then give us your business address?
Sure. I'm employed by One Oak out of their Tulsa office located on 100 West 5th Street.
And what's your position at One Oak?
I am a project manager.
And then can you briefly describe your educational background, your professional experience, and then also give us your duties and responsibilities at One Oak?
Sure. I graduated from the University of Tulsa with a Bachelor's of Science in Petroleum Engineering. I've been at One Oak a little over 5 years now within their large capital projects group, primarily focused on pipeline projects. In that time, I've managed and coordinated a multidisciplinary team to manage pipeline projects.
Okay. And Abel, are you familiar with the contents of the application for the Certificate of Corridor Compatibility and route permit that's marked as hearing exhibit number one?
Yes, I am. It's the application for construction and operation of the Tioga Extension pipeline here in Williams County.
Okay. Can you briefly give us a description of the proposed project?
Sure. If we can see on the map behind us, the Tioga Extension is a little over 7.5 miles of 6-inch steel pipeline, DOT regulated, that would transport wide-grade NGLs from the county line plant and will terminate at the Hess Tioga site. About 76% of the route, or 5.8 miles, is co-located with existing linear infrastructure.
And can you touch on the need for the project?
Sure. The Tioga Extension Pipeline will be a critical link between the County Line plant and the Hess Tioga meter site, and then connecting into other pipeline networks that would provide deliveries to other facilities and to other various markets.
Okay. And what's the anticipated capacity for the project pipeline?
The pipeline is designed for a maximum capacity of 40,000 barrels, with the meter maxed out at 9,000 barrels per day.
Okay. And in evaluating the project, did you look at alternative transportation options to the proposed pipeline?
We did. We considered the trucking and rail options, and due to the volumes currently produced at County Line Plant and the forecasted volumes, determined that trucking would not be as feasible, at a max volume of 40,000 barrels. You know, we're talking over 100 trucks a day, a couple trucks an hour, 24 hours, 7 days a week. And then there's the additional wear and tear on the roads, the seasonal restriction, the inclement weather, road shuts downs. All those could result in the plant needing to shut down and potentially create additional flaring. And so for that reason, trucking was not a viable option given the potential large volumes. And then from a rail standpoint, while we do have a rail here nearby, the added infrastructure to create offloading and loading to the rail. And then there's also the converting of agricultural land to industrial from a permanent standpoint. And again, with those large volumes, we're still talking significant amount of tanker trucks per day. So while rail option is a good viable option for short haul distribution, we still think that you know, pipelines are the most reliable, economical, safer option.
Sure. Can you describe for us the infrastructure involved in the project?
Sure. So the pipeline, the pipeline's outside diameter will be 6.625 outside diameter, with the maximum allowable pressure at 1480 PSIG. So with that, the line pipe and bore pipe's wall thicknesses would be 1.5 and 1.8. And then in this case, we elected to go with a quarter wall X52 pipe. And then I mentioned at the, and then we're going to have a set of traps on either either end of the pipeline. Starting at the county line plant, we're installing a new PIC receiver, a new custody meter, along with the control building. And then over at the end of the line, we're installing a PIC receiver, and in addition to, along with a generator as well.
And there's no significant infrastructure along the line, is there, like compressors, like valves, anything like that?
No, sir.
And then what corridor width is One Oak requesting for the proposed project?
So our corridor width is generally around 200 feet wide, centered on our route. There are areas where our corridor does widen, and that's primarily to allow for our horizontal directional drill pullback sections. So with that, we did extend our corridor to acknowledge the additional disturbances that would take place.
Sure. And then if staff or Your Honor wants to kind of view those are contained in the, they were initially contained in the application and then updated in the supplement, is that correct, the map sets?
Yes.
And those depict the corridor as well?
Yes, they do.
Okay. Thank you. Can you describe for us then, Abel, the process that One Oak used to select the project route?
So typically when we're handed a project, we have the beginning and end in mind. And for the company, the shortest, straightest line is the most cost effective. However, there are many factors to take into consideration. The three that that come to mind, the three main categories that come to mind are the human, environmental, and constructability. And from a human standpoint, you know, we're trying to minimize disturbances to minimize impacts and ensure public safety. And then on the environmental front, we're trying to minimize disturbances to cultural and biological resources. And then on the construction side, we're evaluating terrain and obstacles like roads, structures, water bodies, and other utilities. So as we're keeping those, evaluating those for a route, you know, with the main goal of, you know, minimizing impacts to the maximum extent, as we're building it, operating and maintaining the asset. So once we have that initial route kind of identified, we'll then engage our third-party contractors, our environmental engineering and construction team, to then begin a detailed desktop analysis. And at that point, you know, through those efforts, we did learn of existing corridors in the route that were previously approved by FERC and PSC staff. So with that, we aligned our corridor to fall within those previously approved routes, which then kind of allowed us to then develop the one-mile study area. And then through that, we were able to then begin survey permissions and then engaging with the resource agencies. That led to leading to a viable route for application.
Okay. Since the initial application was filed, the exhibit number one, have any updates been made to the project route since that time?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And are those updates reflected in the revised application hearing exhibit number two?
Yes, they are.
Okay. And can you just briefly walk us through, kind of explain the route adjustments, kind of where they were and kind of the reasoning?
Sure. So we did have route adjustments. We ended up having four. Those four modifications were all within the corridor. These modifications are stemming from the surveys that we performed earlier in the summer. If we want to look at Exhibit A2, we can kind of see, maybe I think it's page 9, a little bit cleaner. Of the four, this here's the first one from mile post 8 to about 1.5, give or take. That first modification, just to kind of roll back, the black boundary indicates kind of our corridor, with the green with the red outlining the modifications. For the most part, these modifications here were stemming from the results of our environmental surveys. And I would refer to Bill Miller to elaborate on those results. And then the other three modifications along the route were stemming from our civil surveys. I think page 10, that's where we were able to properly give ourselves enough offset and distance after locating some foreign utilities and to minimize some of those foreign utility crossings. That would be the summary for the most part on the three route modifications. Again, those modifications are all still within the corridor and just allowing for a safer offset from existing utilities. As I mentioned, we want to make sure this is built safely and more efficiently, leading to these modifications.
Sure. Do you have an anticipated start date for your construction?
We'd like to start here in the next month upon receival of approvals.
Okay. And do you have an anticipated in-service date then?
We're targeting here Q4 of this year.
Okay. And what's the estimated cost of the project?
The total investment is estimated at $13
million. And is there any outstanding right-of-way needed for the project?
No, I'm happy to say that we've acquired 100% of our right-of-way.
Okay. Are you familiar with the commission setbacks with respect to occupied residents?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Are there any occupied residents within 500 feet of the pipeline route?
No, and we determine that based on our aerial view and then our surveys and confirm that we are well outside that 500 foot.
Okay. And then let's move on. Can you touch on your construction practices and how surface impacts will be minimized during the initial construction?
Sure. During construction, we'll have our temporary construction right-of-way will be cleared of any vegetation. Then we'll be graded. And then the topsoil will be cleared. And then we'll have the topsoil segregated to minimize commingling from the topsoil and subsoil. And then we'll have a windrow for storage until the topsoil is replaced during construction. And then during the trenching activities, the ditch will be mechanically excavated or via ditching machine. We'll go down to a depth of 4 feet or 48 inches from top of pipe. And then from a horizontal directional drilling, those will be utilized as necessary. From a reclamation, revegetation, noxious weeding, tree and shrub, I'll defer to Bill to elaborate on that as well.
Sure. And then can you describe if there's the extent of any permanent surface impacts relating to the pipeline?
Once the pipeline has been installed, backfilled, and reclaimed, the surface impacts will... we will likely have are going to be our pipeline markers, our cathodic protection, CP test stations throughout the route, and we'll make sure we're coordinating with the landowners and try to set them at property boundaries, fence lines, edges of roads. That way, we're not putting them in the middle of the field. As for the traps that we're installing at both facilities, we are installing a trap at an existing County Line plant, and then the receiver at the existing Tioga meter site. That would be to the extent of the permanent disturbances.
Sure. And you mentioned working with the landowners to locate those markers. Do you have a procedure to address any landowner concerns either during or after construction?
We do. Before construction starts, we'll send out a letter notifying the landowners of the upcoming construction. We'll provide them with the contact, you know, so that way they can notify us if any issues arise before, during, or after. And then additionally, the landowners, they're going to have the same contact that they were working with during the server permission and easement acquisition process. And then, you know, once the pipeline's placed into service, we make sure that we work with One Oak Operations, provide them a contact list, should they need to reach out to them for any reason.
Sure. Are there any outstanding permits or approvals that are still required for the project?
Yes. At this time, we have our temporary crossing permits. Those are outstanding. And then we have a couple environmental permits that I'll defer to Bill to elaborate on.
Okay. And then exhibit number 4, I think you have a copy up there. Is that a copy of One Oak certification relating to order provisions?
Yes.
And that's been executed by a One Oak representative, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And will One Oak comply with the provisions contained in that certification?
Yes, we will.
Okay. And Abel, will the project be constructed in compliance with applicable safety laws and standards?
Yes, the tail extension will be designed, constructed, and maintained and inspected per DOT PHMSA regulations under Title 49 CFR 195, utilizing industry standards and company policies.
Okay. And can you just briefly highlight or touch on some of those technologies that have been used or will be used in the construction that satisfy those safety standards?
Sure. So during construction, One Oak will utilize third-party inspectors to ensure all work is performed, complying to our One Oak construction specifications and our quality expectations. To ensure that we're in compliance with the state and federal regulations. And as part of that inspection, we are X-raying 100% of our welds. And then in addition to that, once the pipeline has been complete, we will perform a hydro test to ensure the integrity of the steel pipe, the welds, and its components. After a successful hydro test, we'll then run an inline inspection tool that will detect any anomalies. And if there are any anomalies, they'll be evaluated based on that criteria and addressed accordingly. And then once the pipeline's turnover in operation and in service, the pipeline will be monitored via SCADA 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365. And there will be alarms that are continuously monitoring the pressure, temperature, and flow, and will signal if any of those parameters are outside of normal operating conditions. And then lastly, you know, we will have CP protection, and that is will be installed and routinely maintained to ensure our coated pipe is protected.
Sure. And will One Oak utilize the One Call system as part of the construction?
Yes, we will.
Okay. And Abel, in your opinion, will the operation of the project ensure that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly fashion?
Yes.
I have no further questions for Mr. Resendez at this time.
Mr. Johnson, any questions?
Just a couple. You mentioned needing wider corridor for some HDD drilling. How many anticipated spots will you be using the horizontal drilling?
I believe the count is under 20. And those are, within those 20, I think in the 7 miles we have road crossing at about every mile, and we are crossing utility lines and then some wetland and water bodies and other sensitive areas, so about 20.
Okay. And you also mentioned that there's no above-ground facilities except for, like, the carthotic protection and things like that, and you're going to locate those so you don't have to make minimal intrusions on landowners' property, which is appreciated. What does that above-ground facility for the carthotic protection look like? Is it fairly large, fairly small?
Going off memory, it's not. I mean, we're maybe talking a foot one by one a rectifier. And we try to make sure that they're either co-located with existing assets or, like I said, at an edge of a road or a fence line or property line. And we typically, like, with it being kind of one by one, We want to make sure that the landlord is aware that that's being installed and try to coordinate on locations.
Okay. And then you mentioned the monitoring. I'm assuming on this short of a line, you're probably only having shutdown valves on the beginning and the end of each one?
That's correct.
What's the estimated time to shut down in the event anomalies detected? How fast does that pipeline close off?
I can defer to Montana Penton.
Okay.
But our analysis is typically to close the valve within 2 minutes.
Okay. And I know it goes to a SCADA center that maybe not located here. Where is that located at?
For this pipeline, I believe it's in Tulsa, but Montana Penton can confirm.
Okay. And I would assume, though, that at these facilities, are they manned 24 hours a day as well?
I don't know.
Okay. Thank you. That's all the questions I have, Your Honor.
Mr. Hansen, any questions?
Yeah, just a... In addition to the state requirements, you have townships and things. Would you know, just for the record, could you kind of speak to when you build a pipeline like this beyond, you know, what federal the guidelines you talked about, PHMSA and DOT, some of the other guidelines that you have to go by or regulations that you guys have to follow when you build a pipeline like this and approvals you need to get?
To ensure I'm following.
Yeah. Just for the record, beyond what the state does and the local jurisdictions do, you know, just kind of give a little bit of an idea of additional. You talked about PHMSA guidelines that you follow for construction. I mean, are there any additional federal approvals you get? You know, we have a lot of the state requires to get consultation with a lot of the different agencies and stuff like that. But just kind of speak to some of the stuff they have to do on a project like this beyond what the state requires.
What comes to mind from a DOT standpoint is, again, we want to make sure that based on the maximum allowable pressure that we're trying to operate at 1480, that the pipeline is designed to handle that pressure. And then from our drill standpoint, we are designing those drills to ensure that they can handle those forces and stresses as we're doing those directional drills. And then said, like, we're doing the x-rays, we're doing the level 3 auditing of those x-rays, we're doing the hydro test. Let's see.
As a question, are those, does PHMSA require, like, what, you know, I guess what I was looking at is for PHMSA, and like, you maybe explain quickly what PHMSA is and how that, you know, directs you when you build things, and kind of, you know, how what you're doing compares to what, like, the PHMSA requires and things. It's kind of more what I was trying to get to. Well, I guess what I was trying to show is just how your company's policies match up to, you know, a lot of people aren't familiar. Like, start with explaining what PHMSA is and how that guides when you do projects in construction.
Sure. You know, PHMSA is the kind of the, I'm in a tough time. So typically, as I understand, you know, PHMSA is kind of the dictating what needs to, how we need to construct and operate a pipeline. And then we have our company policies that sometimes go above and beyond and kind of provide guidance on how we will tackle those things. And I think from a PHMSA standpoint, it's making sure that we have the appropriate welders and those welders being qualified, and then that we are X-raying our welds, and then ensuring that we're installing at the appropriate depth. So I from that is just making sure that we're abiding to those asks.
Thank you.
I do have one follow-up question, and I guess maybe I'm going to direct this towards Mr. Mann. Are you guys requesting a 20-foot offset from the approved route in case of any unanticipated instances that would require the route to be adjusted slightly?
Yes.
Okay. I appreciate that. I didn't know if you were going to bring that up with another witness or not, but I just wanted to get it on the record.
All right, Mr. Mann, any redirect?
I don't think any redirect. Just with respect, to Mr. Hansen's questions on PHMSA and thing, I think, some of that will also be touched on with Mr. Penton. PHMSA regulations kind of relate and impact to some of the stuff that he works with as well. So.
Okay, great. Mr. Johnson, Mr. Hansen, any other questions?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mann, you can call your next witness.
Next witness will be Bill Miller.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'll have you start by stating your full name for the record and spelling your last name.
Sure. Bill Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R.
And Mr. Miller, I think you were in the room when I went through the penalties for perjury before. Did you hear those?
Yes, I did.
And do you understand what perjury is?
Yes.
And being advised of the potential penalties for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this case today?
I do.
All right, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Mann.
Bill, can you tell us who you work for and your business address?
Yes. Bill Miller, One Oak, Inc. My business address is 2728 Patton Road, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55113.
Okay. And what's your position at One Oak?
Environmental Professional 4.
And go ahead and briefly describe for us your educational background as well as your professional experience, and then touch on your duties and responsibilities at One Oak.
I have a degree from the University of Kansas in environmental policy. I have 27 years of experience as an environmental specialist supporting pipeline development projects, including 10 pipeline projects constructed by One Oak, 10 natural gas liquids pipeline projects, ranging in size from 5 miles long to more than 700 miles long. In my role as an environmental specialist, I'm responsible for ensuring compliance with environmental regulations and the appropriate siting of these facilities.
And were you primarily responsible for conducting the environmental review for the project and preparing the application?
Yes, I was, in conjunction with the One Oak team consisting of the engineering team, construction management, legal, the land agents right of way, and our environmental consultant, environmental resources management.
Okay. And then did you also then have primary responsibility for preparing the environmental reports that are set forth in the application?
Yes, I did, in conjunction with environmental resources management.
Sure. And what's the purpose of your testimony today?
I am here to answer questions regarding the application and the environmental and cultural resources impacts of the project.
Okay. And can you explain for us the study area that was utilized for this project?
Yes, the study area was a 1 mile wide corridor centered approximately or generally on the pipeline route. The pipeline route was sited alongside existing utilities to the extent practicable.
Okay, and then can you explain the approach that One Oak utilized to assess this study area?
Yes, so for the study area, we took into consideration geographic information systems information and agency database data. In addition to that, we looked at the prior approved projects, surveys, and environmental studies within that corridor, and finally engaged with state, federal, and local regulatory agencies with appropriate expertise to seek their input on the exclusion and avoidance areas within the study area.
In addition to that, did you, have any specific meetings with federal or state agencies?
Yes. Yeah. As an example, we met with the Fish and Wildlife Service. We also met with the State Historic Preservation Office. And the purpose of those meetings were to discuss with them the utility of the prior survey information and also of the approach that we were taking with regard to the buffers and the construction methods that we proposed to avoid resources within the corridor.
Okay. And Bill, since the filing of the initial application, that's the hearing exhibit number one, did One Oak conduct any additional surveys on the project?
We did. In May of this year, we conducted tree and shrub inventory. We conducted a noxious weed survey. We conducted a wetland and water body survey. And we evaluated the project corridor for suitable habitat for the Dakota skipper. And finally, we assessed the topsoil depth along the length of the pipeline route.
Sure. And can you discuss the scope of that surveying that occurred since the initial filing of the application?
Yes. So we surveyed the entire corridor that's depicted in the supplement, which ranges from 200 to 360 feet wide. The scope of the surveys was, as I said, I listed the types of surveys that we had, but more specifically, with regard to the DASC, we were surveying for the suitable habitat of the DASC, which is the acronym for Dakota Skipper. For that particular habitat assessment, we utilized a biologist who's licensed, who holds a permit for survey, and used the 2024 Dakota Skipper North Dakota Survey Protocol. We also coordinated with Fish and Wildlife Service regarding the results of that habitat survey in a post-survey phone call with Fish and Wildlife Service.
Okay.
I do have a couple other things to add, if I might. The biologists that we utilized during the wetland and water body survey also surveyed for protected species habitat and evidence of protected species such as bald eagles and other raptors. We did not find any. As I said, noxious weed surveys were delineated within the corridor. And finally, the wetland conservation, the wetland survey included a tract of the property that has a wetland conservation easement with Fish and Wildlife Service, and we coordinated that survey and with the Fish and Wildlife Service themselves to delineate the boundaries of those wetlands and sought their approval for the results of that survey.
Sure. So has a cultural resource investigation been completed for the project?
Yes, cultural resource survey investigation was conducted by Metcalf Archaeological Consultants. It consisted of a Class 1 literature review. As I mentioned earlier, we have a number of prior survey efforts that occurred within our survey corridor. We were able to review the findings of those previous surveys and identify prior recorded sites. 98% of the corridor was covered by prior surveys, prior Class 3 surveys. The remaining 2% of the corridor was previously disturbed and so wouldn't qualify for survey. Due to the disturbance and through consultation with the SHPO, we determined that we could rely on these prior Class 3 surveys and investigations as our survey effort for this project.
Sure. And can you highlight some of the results of the cultural resource investigation?
No cultural resources will be affected by the pipeline route. The investigation did identify cultural resources within the corridor, but just to be clear, the route avoids impacts to cultural resources with sufficient buffers approved by the SHPO.
Okay. And then what's the status of your consultation with SHPO?
We've received the final concurrence from the SHPO with the findings of our survey effort.
And can you discuss any subsequent correspondence or coordination that occurred with SHPO?
We did need to clarify a couple of things, which is explained in the application in Section 6.8. There were a couple of questions and comments that the SHPO had regarding the labeling of sites. We were able to answer those questions and receive final concurrence from the SHPO that no sites will be affected by the project.
Okay. And has a wetland assessment been completed for the project?
Yes, the wetland assessment was completed in May during the field surveys. The results of the wetlands assessment, which was conducted across 100% of the corridor, were that there were 8 wetlands identified. And all of the wetlands are avoided by either HDD or rerouting the route around them, except for about 5/100ths of an acre of a wetland located in an area where we could not practically reroute the pipe any further.
Sure. What studies were completed with respect to biological resources?
We have a habitat review report in the application. It was Exhibit E in the application, which is Exhibit 1 today. And then we have the subsequent May surveys that we conducted, which were filed in the hearing Exhibit 2, the supplemental application document. There were no newly added issues, avoidance, or exclusion areas as a result of those biological surveys. As I said earlier, the surveys included surveys for protected species with a particular focus on the Dakota Skipper, as there are grassland areas along the route that were identified during our initial application. And one of the things that we were able to do with our surveys was to better delineate the boundaries of the actual suitable habitat for the Dakota Skipper, which resulted in the first reroute for the route presented in the supplemental application.
Sure. And are there any project studies that remain outstanding?
No, there are no studies remaining outstanding.
And there's an exclusion area table number 7 in the application that identifies exclusion areas that relate to the project corridor. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Will the project impact any exclusion areas?
It will not.
Okay. And you've also identified avoidance areas, and that's in table 8 of the application. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And can you explain the exclusion or avoidance areas that you've identified that are located either within the project corridor or the route?
Yes, we have cultural resources within the project corridor. The route avoids the cultural resources with sufficient buffers as established in our consultation with the SHPO. Otherwise, we don't have exclusion or avoidance areas within the route or the corridor.
Sure. And then with respect to the PSC's selection criteria, can you identify any potential impacts from the project?
Yes. I mean, we have the project area it contains agricultural properties, and the pipeline construction, as Abel described, will require excavating, moving soil, moving the topsoil, excavating the subsoil, et cetera. So there will be temporary impacts to that agricultural land. It'll be restored to its original conditions, however. There also, during construction, will be noise generated by the construction equipment. There may be dust generated by the construction equipment or the wind blowing across the construction area. There'll be visual impacts. Permanent visual impacts will be limited to, for example, the pipeline markers that Abel described, the cathodic protection equipment, which is rather small, and those will be along the pipeline. The other facilities that Abel described are located within or adjacent to existing oil and gas facilities, so the visual impact would be minimized in that regard. We also have the wetlands and water bodies along the route, which, as I mentioned, are for the most part avoided. We do have that 0.05 acre impact to one wetland. and otherwise were using the HDD or have shifted the route to avoid wetlands. For the, just generally speaking, the route is either in agriculture or grasslands, and our restoration efforts will replace the topsoil in a and reseed in a manner that the pipeline is restored to the original contours and approximately the same condition as prior to construction.
Sure. And can you describe any additional measures that One Oaks adopted to minimize any adverse impacts?
Yes. For construction, I will have an environmental inspector on site who will be working with the construction contractor, helping them comply with the commitments that we've made. In addition to that, we will provide environmental training for at the outset of construction for the construction staff, as well as for new construction staff as they come onto the project throughout the duration of the project. And one other thing would be that the topsoil depths were taken so that we could provide that to the construction contractor for their planning to windrow the topsoil so that we could replace the topsoil at the end of the project.
And has One Oak maximized the benefits that are set forth in the PSC's policy criteria with respect to developing the project?
Yes. Okay.
Can you explain One Oak's plans to mitigate any impacts to trees and shrubs?
Yes. We took an initial inventory prior to construction. That's already been completed. And then during construction, we'll monitor or record the impacts that we have and then prepare a mitigation plan for the PSC's review and approval.
Okay. And Bill, to date, have any state or federal agencies expressed any concerns with the project?
No.
And are there any other permits or authorizations that are necessary for the project? And if so, what's the status of those?
So in addition to the temporary road crossings that Abel mentioned, we have a temporary dewatering permit that we will seek, and we will file that in time to get the 30 days ahead of the planned dewatering events and hydrostatic testing. And both of those permits are the North Dakota general permit.
Okay. And just one more thing with respect to the exhibits that we've got identified. Are you familiar? Exhibit number 3 was some correspondence that was submitted by the Department of Environmental Quality. Are you familiar with that letter?
Yes.
And will One Oak, do you have any concerns with that letter, anything in that letter?
No. We received a very similar letter at the time that we filed the application and have taken those comments into consideration in our application.
And One Oak will comply with the guidelines that you set forth in that letter?
Yes, we will.
And Bill, in your opinion, then, is the pipeline of such length, design, location, or purpose that it will provide or produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and on the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota?
Yes.
Okay. And in your opinion, is the pipeline compatible with the environmental preservation and efficient use of resources?
Yes.
Okay. I have no further questions at this time.
Mr. Johnson, any questions?
I assume in your work with State Historical Society that there's a unanticipated discoveries plan in place with construction in case some cultural resource that was not picked up by the survey is discovered?
That's correct. We have an unanticipated finds plan.
Okay. And does Williams County just require you to submit a noxious weed plan, or do you have to develop one with them?
They did not require us to develop one with them. We have developed a noxious weed plan, and we did reach out to them for the list of noxious weeds in Williams County, so they're aware that we are looking to manage noxious weeds according to the state law.
Okay. And then I guess the last question I have for you, regarding the wetland, I know you said it's a 0.05-acre impact.
Yes.
Did DEQ, Game and Fish, or U.S. Fish and Wildlife have any input or concern over that impact at all?
No.
Is there any sort of reclamation that has to occur with that area because it is a wetland or anything like that?
Yes. So wetlands are treated Similarly to the grasslands, the topsoil will be replaced. One distinction with the wetlands is that we allow them to reseed with the seed source that's in the wetland soil. Otherwise, there's no particular difference with the wetlands. So it's at the edge of the right-of-way as opposed to being crossed by the pipeline. So we won't have equipment tracking through it, et cetera, things that where we would use mats. That won't be necessary. It's just maybe affected by the wind, by the topsoil windrow.
Okay, so the pipeline doesn't actually go through the wetland, or it does?
No, it's at the edge of the workspace.
Okay.
That particular wetland, yes.
Okay, thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Mr. Hansen, any questions?
No, Your Honor.
Any redirect, Mr. Mann?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mann, you can call your third witness.
Okay, next witness is Montana Penton.
Good morning. I'll have you start by stating your full name for the record and spelling your last name.
Good morning. My full name is Montana Penton. Penton is spelled P-E-N-T-O-N.
And Mr. Penton, did you hear me go through the penalties for perjury earlier?
Yes, Your Honor.
And do you understand what perjury is?
Yes, Your Honor.
And being advised of the potential penalties for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this case today?
Yes, I do.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Mann.
Montana, can you tell us who you work for and give us your business address?
Yes. So I work for One Oak, and my business address is 130 Commerce Drive, Spearfish, South Dakota.
And what's your position at One Oak?
I am currently the manager of area operations.
Okay. And can you briefly describe for us your educational background, your professional experience, and then duties and responsibilities with One Oak?
Yes. So educational background, I have a Bachelor's of Science in Business Administration with a focus in economics and finance. Prior to that, I received a vocational certificate in automotive technology and high-performance engines chassis fabrication. my work history, I have about 2 decades of experience with operations and maintenance. 9 years of that is oil and gas operations and maintenance. And then currently for One Oak, I'm the manager of operations for a team of folks that operate and maintain about 1,900 miles of pipeline in North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and Kansas.
Okay. And Montana, will One Oak conduct periodic inspections, surveillance, and maintenance of the pipeline once it's in service?
It will. So once this pipeline is in service, it will be made a part of One Oak's operations and maintenance procedures. Those procedures are written in accordance with 49 CFR 195. And those cover things like right-of-way inspections, operating valves, we'll say every 6 months, make sure they operate correctly, damage prevention, integrity, as well as operator qualification.
Sure. And then just briefly, maybe now, I think you heard Mr. Hansen had a question relating to PHMSA, and then you've just referenced, you know, Part 195, the Code of Federal Regulations. Is that a PHMSA regulation, the 195?
It is. It's a subpart of PHMSA. So PHMSA stands for Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. So they're a sub-organization of the Department of Transportation. So 49 CFR 195 specifically covers liquids pipelines. Then you have 49 CFR 192, which covers gas pipelines.
And then to Mr. Hansen's question, what is PHMSA, I think, is kind of generally like what he was asking. Can you just touch on that?
Sure. So PHMSA is specifically, like I said, it's a subpart of the Department of Transportation, but they specifically regulate the operations, maintenance, and construction of pipelines.
So it's a federal regulatory body that oversees pipeline?
Correct.
Okay. Will the pipeline that we're talking about today, will that contain a leak detection system?
It will. So we perform leak detection of all of our pipelines in several ways. So primarily, we use 24/7 monitoring of various telemetry along the pipeline, and that's monitored by our pipeline control center in Tulsa. Like I said, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Additionally, we perform aerial patrols in accordance with the DOT or PHMSA. So every 21 days, we have an aerial patrol that's completed along in this pipeline. Will be incorporated in that program. In addition to that, our field personnel perform weekly what we call AVO inspections, which are audio, visual, and olfactory inspections, so at these above-ground sites. And those are the, I think those are the three that, additionally, we have, so inline inspections. So PHMSA requires DOT-regulated pipelines be capable of inline inspection using smart tools. This pipeline will be capable of that and will be incorporated into that program. One Oak performs inline smart tool inspections every 5 years.
Okay. And Montana, Abel had some addressed this and had some questions on it, but can you just kind of follow up and elaborate on how the leak detection system will be monitored?
Yes, yeah, so we have a computerized monitoring system, which is constantly monitoring telemetry or data. So we'll say pressure data, temperature, density, flow. If it catches an anomaly, our folks in pipeline control that are monitoring this pipeline 24/7 will see that and respond accordingly.
Sure. And I think, I can't remember if it was Mr. Johnson or Mr. Hansen asked, where is, like, for this line, where is that located, that monitoring site?
That's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's in the plaza. I can't remember the exact address at the moment, but.
Sure. Yeah. Will One Oak have personnel responsible for the pipeline trained in emergency response?
Yes, we will. One Oak participates in North Dakota One Call, the Pipeline Association for Public Awareness, as well as North Dakota Pipeline Association. In addition to that, we send out annual mailings to emergency officials, so you're in all the areas where we operate, and we participate in face-to-face meetings with those emergency officials. In addition to that, our operations, myself usually, will reach out to the local first responders to set up orientation, or we'll say familiarization of the assets prior to commissioning the pipeline.
Okay. And that will relate to both any potential spill response and emergency preparedness?
Correct. One Oak does have an emergency response plan, and we are trained. So we do annual training on that emergency response plan with all of our pipeline operators and folks that would be need to respond potentially to a spill or an emergency on the pipeline. In addition to that, we perform annual drills.
Okay. I have no further questions at this time.
Mr. Johnson, any questions?
I had a couple, but the witness did cover them, so.
Mr. Hansen, any questions?
Yeah, two quick questions. One is, do you have pre-existing facilities in this corridor or in this area? You know, that could have probably gone to the previous person, but I'm just curious about if you have existing lines running in this area.
Yes, sir. So our Tioga pipeline, as you can see right there, starts at that Hess Tioga meter station. I believe that pipeline was put into service in either 2020 or 2021. I don't remember the exact date.
Okay. And along those lines, then approximately, you know, you talk about being over your maintenance operations and maintenance staff. I mean, roughly speaking, in this area, like, how much staff do you have on doing this routine maintenance and kind of the vicinity, and where are they located, in Tioga or in the, you know, the area, or where do they operate out of? Just to kind of give an idea about the size and scope of your operation staff.
Sure. So in the North Dakota area, we'll say the North Dakota area and then the eastern Montana, right there on the border, I have a frontline supervisor. We call it supervisor of area operations. He lives in Dickinson. And then we have 5 pipeline operators. We have 4 I&E technicians and 2 mechanics. The pipeline operators live in Williston, Sydney, Watford, and then actually down in Baker, Montana.
Okay. Thank you. No more questions.
Anything else? No? Mr. Mann, any redirect?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. So the questions for you. Thanks. Any other witnesses, Mr. Mann?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Do we have any members of the public that would like to provide testimony in this case this morning? All right. Oh, come on up, sir. Morning.
Morning.
Just like with our other witnesses, I'll have you state your full name for the record and spell your last name.
My name is Dale Weflin, W-E-F-L-E-N.
Sir Weflin, did you hear me go through the penalties for perjury this morning?
Yes, I did.
And do you understand what perjury is?
Yes.
And being advised of the potential penalties for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this case today?
Yes, I do.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead.
I just have a couple questions on your pipeline. Is this pipe coated, and is it U.S. steel, or is it foreign pipe?
And I'm sure the One Oak representatives would be more than willing to answer your questions after our hearing. Really, the purpose of testimony is for you to provide any information you want for the commission to consider. So I don't know if you have any concerns or thoughts regarding the pipeline that you might want to share as far as testimony. But as far as like questions about the actual pipeline, we generally have the company answer those outside of the hearing.
Okay. All right. That's...
Do you have any comments you wanted to share? Or...
Not at this time. I mean, I guess I'm not real comfortable. I don't live real close to it. They were going to run it closer to my house, but I've seen what high pressure lines do, and you know, just a concern with that.
Okay.
All right.
And I'll just ask Mr. Mann, did I speak out of turn? What are your clients willing to answer?
Yeah,
Mr. Weflin's question?
Mr. Resendez will be able to address that with Mr. Weflin after.
Yep. All right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Weflin. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our hearing. Mr. Mann, will you be filing proposed findings of fact, conclusions of the law, and a proposed order?
Yes, Your Honor, we will.
And do you want to set a deadline for filing those?
I mean, I think 2 weeks would be sufficient. I think we're going to try to get it in as soon as we possibly can. Like Mr. Resendez indicated, you know, there is some urgency here, falls right around the corner, and to be able to get started as soon as possible, we're going to do everything in our power to get that in as soon as possible. So, but just would request 2 weeks.
Any objection, Mr. Johnson?
No, Your Honor.
All right. That day, according to my calendar, is August 13th, so that'd be 2 weeks from today. So we'll set that as a deadline for filing those. Any other matters you would like to address before we conclude, Mr. Mann?
Not on my end. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Johnson, did you have anything?
Nothing on my end, Your Honor.
All Then I will note for the record that it's 10:04 a.m., and that'll conclude our hearing for today. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.